Where do you see your career in 10 years? What are you doing now to help you get there? The sooner you start enhancing your skills, the sooner you'll be ready. That's why AARP has reskilling courses in a variety of categories like marketing and management to help your income live as long as you do. That's right. AARP has a bevy of free skill-building courses for you to choose from because the steps you choose to take today will help you love what you do in the future. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/skills.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G-connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
If you're looking for a new podcast but don't know where to start, here's one you can add to your list. The Jordan Harbinger Show. The Jordan Harbinger Show is aimed at making you a better informed critical thinker so you can get a sense of how the world actually works and come to your own conclusions about what's happening. Jordan talks to everyone from neuroscientists to CEOs to astronauts, authors, and performers. You might enjoy Jordan's interview with historian Yuval Noah Harari, the author of Sapiens, A Brief History of Humankind, or his episode with Fool Me Once author Kelly Richmond Pope, on how fraud became a trillion-dollar industry. Whether Jordan's conducting an interview or giving advice to a listener, you'll find something useful that you can apply to your own life in every episode of The Jordan Harbinger Show. That could mean learning how to ask for advice the right way, or it could just be discovering a slight mindset tweak that changes how you see the world. Search for The Jordan Harbinger Show, that's H-A-R-B-I-N-G-E-R, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Pushkin. One of the most interesting people in the crypto world right now is Sam Bankman-Fried. He's 30 years old, founded the crypto exchange FTX a few years back, and today he is worth around $20 billion, according to Forbes. And yet he still lives with roommates and drives a Toyota Corolla. And maybe the most interesting thing about Sam? He's actually not that into crypto. He didn't get into it because he thinks Bitcoin is going to replace the dollar or that we're on the brink of some revolution in the very meaning of money. He got into crypto so that he could make as much money as possible and then give almost all of it away. So when Sam thinks about really big problems, he doesn't necessarily think about how much the price of Bitcoin is falling or that a big stable coin fell apart a few weeks ago. He thinks about things like how to save humanity from extinction.
How many people will live if we play our cards right as a world, like in the 90th percentile outcome, how many people will live in the future? The answer is trillions, probably. Maybe hundreds of trillions?
Hundreds of trillions. I'm Jacob Goldstein, and this is What's Your Problem? The show where entrepreneurs and engineers talk about how they're going to change the world once they solve a few problems. My guest today is Sam Bankman-Fried, and his problem is this. How do you save the world? Before we get to the interview, I just want to take a minute here and set up this one big idea, this really useful intellectual framework that drives almost everything Sam does. It's called expected value.
I try to use it a lot because I think it sort of is the default correct way in some senses to calculate something. Like if you're just trying to do a generic calculation, I think it's usually the right thing to use.
You can understand expected value by understanding how Sam decided to start his company, the crypto exchange FTX. He was working as a trader, making millions of dollars, and when he thought about starting FTX, he knew there was a really good chance it might fail. It might ultimately be worth zero. But on the other hand, if it succeeded, it could be worth tens of billions of dollars. So here is a slightly oversimplified version of how you would use expected value in this case. Say Sam thought there was only a 1% chance that his exchange would be really successful, but that if it were really successful, it would make him $20 billion. The expected value of starting the exchange is the probability of it being successful, 1%, times the value if that success happens, $20 billion, which comes out to $200 million. A lot. So in 2019, Sam started FTX. And Sam told me there is a really important lesson here about expected value.
One of the sort of takeaways that often ends up coming from really thinking hard and critically about expected values is that you should go for it way more than is generally understood.
Go big. You should really go really big, even if you probably will fail and wind up with zero.
That's absolutely right. And I think one of the intuitions for why that's the case, for why I think going big is often the right thing to do. Well, if you think about it, like, you know, you've got obviously a number of options available to you. Somewhere on the far right hand side of distributions is like the best possible thing.
Meaning the really good outcomes.
That's right.
Right. Yeah,
the best possible thing you could imagine happening. And the best possible thing is probably really good. You know, it's probably orders of magnitude bigger than whatever you're sort of expecting to do.
Yeah, right. It's not a little better. It's wildly better. It's almost unimaginably better.
That's right. And if you're thinking about, well, if I found a company, how is it going to go? You know, you're probably thinking this might be a $1 million company, right? But the right-hand distribution, the right-hand tail of that is going to be a $1 billion company. And that's 1,000 times bigger. And so in order for it to be justified to choose that decision, if you really do care linearly about money, if you really do think that getting that marginal, you know, dollar is worth a lot, you know, even once you already have a lot of money, then it should lead you to think that you know, the best outcomes might be outcomes that have a 99% chance of failure, right? Because a 99% chance of failure and a 1% chance of that billion is still, that's 10 million and that's a lot. And so anytime that like there is some non-zero and non-negligible chance of a really, really good outcome are times when you're going to be incentivized more than seems natural, probably, to choose extreme outcomes.
I feel like that maps in different ways, both to your work you do for money and your altruism, which obviously are tied up, right? They both seem like very much rooted in those extreme outcomes. In the case of your work, it's an extremely large amount of money in a short amount of time. And in the case of the altruism, it's profoundly bad outcomes, like everybody dying, right? Like both of those are sort of the same in the kind of expected value universe. They're things we should probably think more about than seems intuitive if we're not using expected value.
That's exactly right. And, you know, when you think, as you said, the altruism perspective, right? How many people will live if we play our cards right as a world, like in the 90th percentile outcome, how many people will live in the future? The answer is trillions, probably, maybe hundreds of trillions, right? It's thousands of times more than the number of people who have ever lived. And so that's a huge factor, right? Anything that we do that actually has impact on the whole future of the world is massively important.
Yeah. It's kind of a ridiculous way to think at some level, right? Yeah. It just gets so big, then like, you're just some guy with a lot of money at some level, right? Talking about like trillions of people and the whole future of humanity. Like it gets weird, right?
It does get really weird. You should really stress test these and think like, okay, do I really believe this? Like, do I really actually think that there is compelling evidence that like, you know, these numbers that I'm looking at are as big as I'm claiming they are? Or am I kind of bullshitting myself on this? Like, you know, you should absolutely have some humility around that, but it's not totally implausible. And there are examples of people who we've heard of who are very famous and people who no one has ever heard of, who have had massive, massive impact on the world, who have had that massive multiplier. And so it's not totally implausible. Yeah. And so, you know, I think that like, while we should absolutely have, you know, a healthy dose of humility towards extreme outcomes, you know, we should also acknowledge that they can be real. And that often the highest expected value things are, in fact, pushing directly towards them.
Well, and in fact, you did hit the extreme right tail of the distribution in work, right? You did just get implausibly rich in a ridiculously short period of time. So at least on that one,
it worked.
That's right. And I think it's that certainly has been a big update towards me in the direction of like, this stuff is plausible.
Uh-huh. So the fact that you got so rich so fast in crypto, does it push your altruism toward like, well, shit, if I could make $20 billion in 3 years, everybody on Earth could in fact die from a pandemic or from some out of control AI. And I should spend some of the money to try and reduce the probabilities of that. I mean, is it like that?
Yeah, it absolutely does. I think it absolutely does make me think, you know what, like these, you know, really extreme outcomes are probably plausible, and they're probably plausible enough that I should be taking them really seriously, you know, and that has pretty profound implications, I think, for what we should be doing.
We'll get to those profound implications and to exactly where Sam is giving his money away in just a minute.
You probably think it's too soon to join AARP, right? Well, let's take a minute to talk about it. Where do you see yourself in 15 years? More specifically, your career, your health, your social life. What are you doing now to help you get there? There are tons of ways for you to start preparing today for your future with AARP. That dream job you've dreamt about? Sign up for AARP reskilling courses to help make it a reality. How about that active lifestyle you've only spoken about from the couch? AARP has health tips and wellness tools to keep you moving for years to come. But none of these experiences are without making friends along the way. Connect with your community through AARP volunteer events. So it's safe to say it's never too soon to join AARP. They're here to help your money, health, and happiness live as long as you do. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/wisefriend. If you're listening to this podcast right now and you're a small business owner, listen up. Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're actually choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers. They do everything from hyper-targeting best fit prospects through campaign optimization. Upswell Marketing's unique approach includes direct mail, search engine marketing, and social media ads, and has fueled more than 10,000 small business success stories. Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies. Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com. And now a word from the show's sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry, Betterment is here to help. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. The automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal, rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line, and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again. Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
That's the end of the ads. Now we're going back to the show. Sam told me he's given away about $200 million so far, which obviously is a lot, but it is also somewhere around 1% of what he plans to give away eventually. His giving has been broad, but anti-poverty, animal welfare, healthcare, but he has started to focus on a few areas. One of the biggest is pandemic preparedness. That is a category that fits right into that expected value framework. You know, a low probability but super deadly pandemic is worth spending a lot to prevent. Another place where he's been giving is politics. Sam was one of the biggest donors to President Biden's 2020 campaign. More recently, he donated over $10 million to support a candidate in a Democratic primary for a congressional seat in Oregon, largely because that candidate wanted to focus on pandemic preparedness.
The primary was held just last week, and Sam's candidate lost by a lot.
I think that there are a lot of takeaways from it. And, I think that, like, you know, if I were to do it again, I would do it a bit differently than last time. Fundamentally, I think it was a well-fought race. I think that, like, he had a real shot. Going back to the discussion of expected values, right? Like, if you're donating political races such that you think your candidates are 99% to win, you're almost certainly doing something wrong.
Right, because that person doesn't need your money.
Exactly. You should be donating such that you think that you have a pretty substantial chance of losing. And, I sort of stand by that.
Do you expect you'll give a lot of money in the 2024 election cycle?
I would guess so. I don't know for sure. It's going to depend on who's running, but, I would guess so.
Well, let's say Donald Trump runs for president. Would that cause you to probably give a lot of money to the person who is running against him?
That's a pretty decent guess. I think that I'm going to be looking a lot less at, like, political party from that perspective and a lot more about, sane governance. Like, that is, at its core, the thing that I think I care the most
sane.
About.
You said, just to be clear, sane governance.
Sane governance. I think the United States has both a big opportunity and a big responsibility to the world to shepherd the West in a powerful but responsible manner. And that everything that we do there has massive, massive ripple effects on what the future looks like.
You've talked before about being surprised at how little money is in politics. It is quite small, the amount of money that is donated relative to how much money the government spends, right? Does that lead you to want to donate a lot? I mean, does it follow from that, like, you'll probably donate a lot of money?
It follows that I might. In the end, that's basically what I think. I think that, like, there are in some ways, so there's, in some ways, surprisingly little money in politics. And given sort of the scope of its impact, now, that doesn't necessarily mean there are good things to do, donating in politics, right? Like, it might be that, sure, but, like, how are you actually going to do anything useful? Maybe that's how it turns out, but maybe not,
You mean it's not necessarily the case that more money can have a meaningful effect on the outcome?
That's right. It's not necessarily the case, but it certainly gestures a little bit in that direction.
I imagine you have some probability distribution in your mind of how much money you might give in the next election cycle. Like, give me some number.
I would guess north of 100 million. As for how much north of that, I don't know. It really does depend on what happens. Like, it's really dependent on exactly who's running where for what. Like these are super contingent things. But I think that gives maybe some sense of what the sort of, like, scale might be here.
More than 100 million sort of spread across many races, organizations, but toward the 2024 election. So if that's a floor, what's the ceiling? Like, a billion? Might you give a billion?
Yeah, I think that's a decent, like, thing to look at as a sort of, like, I would hate to say, like, hard ceiling, because who knows what's going to happen between now and then. But as, like, at least sort of a soft ceiling, I would say, yeah.
Okay, so the ballpark is, like, 100 million-ish to a billion-ish.
With, again, a lot of caveats on this. And, there's a world in which it ends up being close to zero. If they're, things just work out such that there isn't much I'm excited about.
Like, that seems like a very low probability to me, based on what I know about you and the world.
Yeah, I think it's very low that it's actually going to end up being zero. That does seem pretty unlikely.
Yeah. A billion seems way more likely than zero to me.
I think it's probably right.
So I think the most anybody gave last time, if I have the right numbers, is 215 million. That's for the 2020 cycle, the last presidential cycle. It seems like you'll probably give more than that, based only on what you've told me.
I think it is eminently possible that I think that would not surprise me.
I've heard you say that, at some points over the next few years, you hope to find opportunities where you can give away like $1 billion really quickly. What are some of the places you think that might happen? I mean, the election, the 2024 election is clearly one. What are a few others?
I think pandemic prevention is potentially one of them. I think you look at like, how much would it cost to, you know, really definitely prevent the next pandemic, or you can never definitely prevent it, but to have, you know, a really good shot at it. I think you're probably talking tens of billions of dollars.
Which it's crazy that that governments aren't spending that money, right?
That's right. That really should be government spending it. And part of this might be working with governments on it.
Because it's not that much. Like, if they could reduce the risk of a pandemic by half, say, for $30 billion a year, like, do you actually think that? Is that true? Or $50
billion? I think something like that's probably true. I think something that's, like, not too far off from that order of magnitude. And that probably, you know, by the time you're talking about, you know, many tens of billions of dollars, you know, that's something that you're probably going to need to have government stepping in on. But, I would be happy to throw in a fair bit to help facilitate that.
So I should have asked this earlier, but to what extent are your political donations a pandemic prevention strategy?
So I think most of them have been so far. And you know, going forward, like, there may come other policy, you know, things like AI policy that you know, end up being really important. And so it's not to say that like pandemics are the only thing that are ever going to matter to me policy wise, but that has been the big one so far.
And is the idea there like tens of billions of dollars a year to significantly reduce the risk of another pandemic is not that much for the government, but it's more than you have, right? So you need a lever. You can't actually spend all of your money and meaningfully reduce the chances of another pandemic. And so if you can use political donations to elect candidates who want to spend money to prevent a pandemic, that works.
That's right.
So you're giving lots of money to political candidates. You're also doing a lot of work to shape regulation of crypto in the US. Tell me about the overlap between those two things.
So most of the giving has not been done with crypto in mind. And I have been doing a ton of policy engagement on that, but that's mostly going to DC and talking with policymakers.
I mean, here's the narrow version of the question is part of what you want from your political donations some particular outcome in crypto regulation?
That is not a big part of it.
I wanted to talk more about crypto with Sam, but our time was running short. I do promise to talk more about crypto on the show before too long. And Sam did have time for a quick lightning round. We'll have that lightning round in a minute. You probably think it's too soon to join AARP, right? Well, let's take a minute to talk about it. Where do you see yourself in 15 years? More specifically, your career, your health, your social life. What are you doing now to help you get there? There are tons of ways for you to start preparing today for your future with AARP. That dream job you've dreamt about? Sign up for AARP reskilling courses to help make it a reality. How about that active lifestyle you've only spoken about from the couch? AARP has health tips and wellness tools to keep you moving for years to come. But none of these experiences are without making friends along the way. Connect with your community through AARP volunteer events. So it's safe to say it's never too soon to join AARP. They're here to help your money, health, and happiness live as long as you do. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/wisefriend.
If you're listening to this podcast right now and you're a small business owner, listen up. Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're actually choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers. They do everything from hyper-targeting best fit prospects through campaign optimization. Upswell Marketing's unique approach includes direct mail, search engine marketing, and social media ads, and has fueled more than 10,000 small business success stories. Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies. Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com. If you're looking for a new podcast but don't know where to start, here's one you can add to your list. The Jordan Harbinger Show. The Jordan Harbinger Show is aimed at making you a better informed critical thinker so you can get a sense of how the world actually works and come to your own conclusions about what's happening. Jordan talks to everyone from neuroscientists to CEOs to astronauts, authors, and performers. You might enjoy Jordan's interview with historian Yuval Noah Harari, the author of Sapiens, A Brief History of Humankind, or his episode with Fool Me Once author Kelly Richmond Pope on how fraud became a trillion-dollar industry. Whether Jordan's conducting an interview or giving advice to a listener, you'll find something useful that you can apply to your own life in every episode of The Jordan Harbinger Show. That could mean learning how to ask for advice the right way, or it could just be discovering a slight mindset tweak that changes how you see the world. Search for The Jordan Harbinger Show, that's H-A-R-B-I-N-G-E-R, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Okay, let's get back to the show. We're going to close with the lightning round.
Let's just do a lightning round. A few quick questions, and you can answer them fast. What's the least rational thing you do?
Least rational thing. I spend way too much time like aimlessly browsing my Facebook feed.
Is it true you still sleep on a beanbag chair? And if so, why?
I did last night. I do many nights. I find it, I don't know. It's what I'm used to is honestly just part of the answer there. It's like, it's what feels natural for me.
If everything goes well, what problem will you be trying to solve in 5 years?
I would say the details of what to prioritize for pandemic prevention funding with, you know, institutes that have been set up and are, you know, unloading a ton of capital into it and, you know, really great teams who are devoting themselves to building it out.
So the dream is you'll be like deep in the weeds figuring out how to prevent a pandemic. I've seen in other interviews you doing lots of different things during the interview. I couldn't actually tell if you were doing other things during this interview, but were you? And if so, what were you doing?
I was playing game of Storybook Brawl.
I say the name of the game again?
Storybook Brawl.
How did you say it?
I took second place out of 8. Could have been worse. And I apologize. I do have to hop off.
Okay, last one. What's one piece of advice you'd give to somebody trying to solve a hard problem?
One piece of advice I would say, I just keep going. Just keep going step by step, you know, trying to solve it bit by bit. And, you know, eventually, hopefully you'll get there.
Sam Bankman-Fried is the founder and CEO of FTX. Today's show was produced by Edith Russolo, edited by Robert Smith, and engineered by Amanda K. Wong. You can reach us at problem@pushkin.fm, or you can find me on Twitter at Jacob Goldstein. I'm Jacob Goldstein, and I'll be back next week with another episode of What's Your Problem?
How do you create present and future value? As a leading provider of specialized finance, operations, and technology advisory services for Fortune 500 companies, emerging growth market leaders, and private equity sponsors, Cross-Country Consulting solves today's most pressing challenges and creates present and future enterprise value. With tailored integrated solutions for accounting, risk, technology-enabled transformation, and transaction solutions, Cross-Country works as a strategic partner and collaborative part of your team. The future-ready business, insight and within reach. Go to crosscountry-consulting.com to learn more.
If you're looking for a new podcast but don't know where to start, here's one you can add to your list. The Jordan Harbinger Show. The Jordan Harbinger Show is aimed at making you a better informed critical thinker so you can get a sense of how the world actually works and come to your own conclusions about what's happening. Jordan talks to everyone from neuroscientists to CEOs to astronauts, authors, and performers. You might enjoy Jordan's interview with historian Yuval Noah Harari, the author of Sapiens, A Brief History of Humankind, or his episode with Fool Me Once author Kelly Richmond Pope on how fraud became a trillion-dollar industry. Whether Jordan's conducting an interview or giving advice to a listener, you'll find something useful that you can apply to your own life in every episode of The Jordan Harbinger Show. That could mean learning how to ask for advice the right way, or it could just be discovering a slight mindset tweak that changes how you see the world. Search for The Jordan Harbinger Show, that's H-A-R-B-I-N-G-E-R, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you listen to podcasts.